Coming up today, we will have Chapter 5, Part 2. But before we get into the lecture, do we have any questions about last week's lecture or labs or anything else like that? Okay, not hearing any questions and not hearing any names in chat, so we'll go ahead and start on Chapter 5, Part 2. We left off last week with public and private IP addresses. So basically what happens with this, you have your public IP addresses, which are used over the internet. Your private IP addresses are not. So this gives you quite a bit of flexibility for your public private networks. And they do have the classes that you can use for your public and private IP addresses. So this gives you one the way this works, it gives you one class A, 16 class B, and 256 class C networks. So that would give you quite a few IP addresses to use, both public and private. Okay, now they do go into in the diagram here, they do go into your network portions of your IP addresses. So I think you can probably look over that. Alright, and it also says obviously that your private IP addresses are never routed onto the internet. If they are, well, then there's a problem. A very big problem. And you need to reconfigure your router. Okay. There's an activity here where you have to choose whether or not to pass or block the IP addresses. I'm kind of thinking we can probably skip this one unless anybody wants to do it. Because you can look the IP addresses up in your notes. But if anybody wants to do it, you can just put it in chat if you want to do it. Okay, well, hearing nothing, if you do look over the activity in your notes and you have questions on it, you can send Indie Instructors an email. But I think this one's pretty self-explanatory. Like I said, if you look over the diagram, you should be able to figure that one out. So, questions thus far before we move on to unicast, multicast, and broadcast addresses. Okay, let's do it this way. Does somebody want to define what unicast means? Okay. I don't hear anybody. So, your unicast address, or your unicast, means that you have one host sending something to another host. Multicast, is one host sending to a group, and broadcast is one host to everybody else on the network. So,
this is
your
really important,
Yeah. Yes, this is important. And I can tell you this is important because I just went over an exam. And there are several questions on the exam about this. So, the destination IP address in your packet header and the destination MAC address in the frame header determine which message type you are sending. So your IP address, your host portion, excuse me, is all ones. So it would be, your host portion would be 255. throughout. So, for instance, if you have a subnet, an IP address of 192, if you have an IP address of 192.168.1.1 with or dot, yeah, if you're, let me restart this. That's better. If your subnet mask is 255.255.255.0, which is a standard Class C subnet mask, and say for instance you are on 192.168.1 network, your broadcast address, your broadcast IP address would be 192.168.1.255. Same goes for the other classes. But just remember your broadcast address is always going to be, your host portion is always going to be all ones. All the bits are going to be ones, so it's always going to be a 255 ending IP address for your host portion. Your broadcast MAC address is, and I don't know if I remember, let's see, I don't know if I mentioned, I think I did last time. Your MAC addresses for your broadcast are going to be 48 ones, which is basically going to be FF, and it's in the MAC address is usually hexadecimal. And it is in pairs of hex digits, either separated by colons if you're in Linux, and some other operating systems do it, or dashes in Windows. So I've seen them with the dashes and the colons both. So your broadcast MAC address will be FF colon FF colon FF colon FF colon FF colon FF. So you're going to have your 48 ones, which would be your MAC address for the broadcast. So anything sent to that MAC address will be a broadcast message. Okay. If you remember, and I think I went over this one too, Class D addresses are your multicast addresses. And they range from IP addresses of 254.0.0, I mean, excuse me, 224.0.0.0 to 239.255.255.255. Now, your MAC addresses for the multicast, your MAC addresses, will, let's see, your MAC address, your multicast MAC address will begin with 01-00-5E, and the last three of the MAC address pairs will be the IP address converted to hex. And I'll go through that, and there's a diagram here that I'm going to go through. If anybody needs it, I'll go through it to illustrate that point. But it is in your notes. But
Lucky it's
I'm
not
kind of
disk.
wondering if it, no, it's not. But
No,
if
it's not
anybody
disk.
does need me to, yeah. Luckily, it is not. And your
What are
source
we talking?
IP address will multicast MAC addresses, and the fact that they're not tested really that much, except the beginning portion of it. If they were, that would be rather interesting. I could see an exam question asking about that, but very fortunately, you're only asked about the beginning of the MAC address for a multicast. Multicast MAC address. Okay, there is a diagram in your notes. You can skip skim through it if you haven't already. Does anybody need me to go over that?
Yes, please.
Okay. Then, what you have in the diagram, there's a frame that is being sent to a multicast group. This is the diagram in your notes. And they give the frame information and source IP and source MAC address and destination and IP and MAC address. So they give this frame. So your. I'm trying to skim
I
through the
think this is
diagram here. Just give me one second.
one we weren't sure how to. Oh, is this an activity or just a diagram?
No, this is just a diagram.
Ah.
Okay. So the host, the source host, has an IP address of 192.168.1.5. And they give the MAC address, which I don't think is used, at least the source MAC address isn't for the illustration that I'm gonna do. Your destination host is a multicast group, and the IP address that they give is 224.15.100.1.5. All right, so is everybody with me so far?
Is anyone with him so far?
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to ask.
Pardon, I didn't get you.
Okay. I was just asking if everybody was with me so far on the diagram that I'm going over.
Does everybody
Okay.
understand what
Yes, we
multicast is
are.
for? Does everybody understand what multicast is actually for? Like, do you guys have any idea what you'd actually use multicast for?
My guess is that silence means no.
I don't know what to
That's
make of
true.
that silence.
Yeah.
Guys,
All right.
are you guys having trouble following along here? Has this become too difficult? Like, have you guys missed a point or something here? Because we're getting a lot of silence on this end.
It's okay if you
We can
have.
go back
There's
and go
not
over
there's
it.
Yeah, and
That's
I
why
don't
they're
mind. I
asking,
mean,
because
I.
if you have, they want to actually help you get it.
Oh, I don't know if this is.
Okay. Do you know what multicasting's used for, Brian? How would you explain what multicasting's used for? I've got an explanation if you don't have one.
Well, multicasting is used. One thing you can use it for is like for online gaming. You could probably multicast would be used for actually stuff like what we're doing now with the Ventrilo.
No, it's not.
Not quite.
Sorry, no. No. Multicasting is used, you're right, with online games. Multicast is used if you've got a lab full of 20 computers and you've got an imaging server. So what you do is you tell the 20 computers to listen to the imaging server and you send out the image of the workstation and you send one copy of the image to all 20 workstations at once and then the whole lab is re-imaged. That is what multicasting is used for. There are other uses, but that's the big one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Beats having to connect computers one by one to an image server and go that way.
Well, also, if you've got 20 computers, you have to send 20 copies of the image down off the network. So if you've got a 10 gig image, that's 200 gig of data. Whereas if you're multicasting, you're only sending 10 or 11 gigs, so you're only sending one copy down. The way I think of multicasting personally is it's like, I mean, it's a network way of like dialing into a telephone conference. You're choosing to listen to like a phone conference and you're keying in a special number that lets you listen to that conference. I just made that up, but hey, that's how it works.
That's a quite that's quite lot quite a understandable one actually, because a lot of us have played with phone conferencing thing.
That's about the best way I could have thought to describe it. I do know in the notes they say like online gaming you can use it for, and that's kind of where I was thinking of coming from with that too. Akilesh, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I got the means what do you mean by means what do we mean by multicasting? Then what's the difference between multicasting and broadcasting?
Your multicasting is like what Carrie said when you have one computer that sends out information to several others. Your broadcast, well, actually, the multicast is actually for like a group of computers. So, if let me, I'll try it this way, and if I'm wrong, Carrie, you can correct me. But if you have a network, and say you have like one particular group of computers, you can set that one group of computers up for a multicast. So they're going to be the only ones to receive information from a particular server, say an image server, out of a lab, like what Carrie was describing. Your broadcast will actually go to the entire network, not just one group of computers. Does that kind of clarify things? It's basically who it's being sent to. Whether it's being sent to the entire network or just a specific group or part of the network. Does that clarify things?
Because don't forget, a radio broadcast is broadcast to every single person that's tuned in to the station that it's on. That's everybody. That's what I just
Okay,
thought.
I got it. Thank you.
Okay. Let me see. Where was I here? Oh, okay. Now, with the destination MAC address, I wanted to kind of go over this, even though part of it's on the exam, part of it's not, but I kind of thought it was a good idea to go over it. Okay, so the beginning portion of your multicast MAC address is 01-00-5E. Now, that's only three of the six pairs of hex digits that you need for the MAC address. The other three come from the last three of the IP address, which comes up to be 0F for the, let me see where the IP is. And now that I want it, I can't find it in this diagram. Here we go. Okay. The multicast IP was 224.15.100.197.
Hey, we've just covered this. Like, we've just spent the
I didn't
past
quite.
5 minutes talking about what multicast is.
What are you not understanding about the concept? Is there a specific question that you have on multicasting? Broadcasting goes to everyone, multicasting goes to multiple computers, and unicast just goes to one. It's the very, very, very simple version of what it all is.
Well, can we give means sending an email to the group like Google group means can it will
No.
be
No. This is
okay.
not used for email. This is not. This is a packet level thing. This is not.
This is how
No,
network
no. I'm
computers
just giving
talk
an
to each
example.
other on a network. Are you trying to come up with your own anal with an analogy to it? Because I think we've pretty much done that as much as we
Yeah,
possibly can.
it's not like email at all. Email actually gets picked up by a server and then reflected out. That's nothing like multicasting. Multicasting happens on the network straight away. Every computer gets who is tuned into the multicast group gets the packet at the same time. Bang! Not like email. So, no, it's not like email at all. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. So, do we think telecast is come under multicast, sir?
That's broadcast, because anyone
Everybody
can
who's
receive
tuned
that
into the
signal.
TV station, every single person who connect, who can get reception of it, they get all get the same thing because it's the same chip.
Multicast would be like a a video conference that somebody had to get a special code to enter.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, what I thought means broadcast itself only. I thought radio program itself broadcast. So now I got clarification. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else on multicast? I do want to finish up one last part of the MAC address here. But basically, what you have with your multicast IP, the last three of your IP, so your 224.15.100.197, the 15.100.197 are the last three of your MAC address. They're just translated into hexadecimal characters. And that's pretty much how, between the multicast IP and the MAC address, that's how computers know what they are getting and what they're supposed to receive and what they're not. Okay. Questions. We have an activity here that I'm gonna go over. I'm just skimming this activity to see if how it I was just trying to skim this activity to see if there was a way to actually do it easily. This is activity 5.2.3. Suggestions, Carrier Grace, because I'm not sure how to do this one easily.
I'd have to open it and look at it.
Okay. It's the one asking about, you have to choose the hosts that will receive packets, and it gives a whole bunch of information.
You know how I do a lot of these? I mean, we don't have to do it this week, but I'd assign them as, well, it makes more marking, but I'd almost assign some of these as email back assignments.
Once we get Pranav's email fixed, we probably should. But he's kind of very broken right now. Brian, have you heard from him?
No, I haven't. Well, I'll tell you what I know after lecture, but I haven't heard from him in a couple of weeks, actually.
Ah, fair enough. I'll track him down. I've got his cell phone.
Okay. I think we'll just skip the activity, and I'll chat with him, and we'll see what we want to do about doing some of these as email assignments. All right. Questions before we move on.
Sir, Pradeep here. I had a small question to ask. Being in JAWS user, how to identify our MAC address of our individual computers?
What do you mean? How do you identify the MAC address of individual computers? I mean, you're looking for the
No, for
command
example, if I'm sitting
to.
in a one if I'm sitting in a one computer, so I want to know which MAC address I'm using. I want to know how to know this. What is the procedure?
You can go.
There's two ways.
Probably the easiest way to. Well, yeah, I was gonna say, the easiest way that I know of, and I know there's probably another one out there. You can go to your command prompt and do an ipconfig slash all, which will give you all the MAC addresses to your network cards. And what's the other way, Carrie, that you're thinking of?
Pull up the properties of my network places, pull up the properties of the network controller, or go into the control panel, networking, change advanced settings if you're under 7. Pull the properties of the Ethernet adapter, go to the support tab, and it all shows up in a read-only edit view with all goody cutting and pasting bits. It's got IP address, MAC address, lease, renewed, all that sort of stuff. That's a little harder to get to, but certainly easier to pull information out of for a lot of people.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yes, sir. Thanks.
Okay, no problem. Anything else before we move on?
So I had another question also. So for example, if I want to send a message to all the computers, like so how to send that message also, I want to know.
That's not what broadcasting is for. Broadcasting is a network level thing, not a user level thing. You can't send a message to everybody going, "Hey guys, it's time for Warcraft, fight to the death tournament." This broadcasting is for, you could ping all the computers and get a response back from them, but you can't like send a message as such to all computers.
Okay, thanks.
Well, here in just a little bit, I'll kind of show one example of where the broadcast comes in, and we're getting to that in just a minute, or just a little bit here. Any other questions? Okay, so next section on this is basically talking about how IP addresses are obtained. And there are two ways to do this. You can do it statically or dynamically. Personally, unless I absolutely have to, I don't do things statically for the fact that you have to define everything. You have to give the default gateway, your subnet mask, and the IP address. This is, it's alright if you have a small network, but if you go into a larger network, this is going to get really, really confusing really, really quickly, especially when you have multiple hosts on the network, because then you have to keep track of what IP addresses have already been assigned and what subnet masks, and if you type something in wrong, well, then you're going to have a really bad day trying to troubleshoot it. So that's kind of the one or a couple disadvantages of static IP addressing. So the other way to do this is dynamic. The other way to do this is through what's called DHCP, which is Dynamic Host Configuration Protocol. So this actually is where your routers and some servers come in, if they're configured with the software to do it. They will go and they will actually send out IP address, subnet mask, default gateway, and I think possibly DNS information. I'll have to check into that one. Is that one I'm not sure of?
DHCP, but definitely.
Yes, it does.
DNS information.
Okay. I thought so, but I wasn't 100% sure. And I think that's the other thing. If you need to set them in static IP addressing, I think you'll have to set those manually. In fact, yes, you will have to set them manually. Your DNS servers. So that's the other disadvantage to static IP addressing. So your DHCP servers, they have a range of IP addresses, or what they call a pool of IP addresses, that they can hand out. And so that's pretty much how they do it. They'll hand out certain range of IP addresses on the network, and then you're given that IP address for a specific amount of time, depending on how your network administrators have them set up. And then once you disconnect from the network, that IP address goes back into the pool and it can be reassigned. And that's pretty much all that needs to be said about that section.
Is there a lab in here on releasing or renewing and stuff? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think so. Hang on, I'm checking through my notes. Oh, nope, I'm wrong. There is one other thing that I'm going to go over here. That is the DHCP discover messages that are sent. Now, what happens here with a DHCP discover message, and this is why I said the broadcast would come up again. What happens here, there's three different steps to your DHCP discover. Your clients will send out a message and say, hey, I need an IP address. So that's your initial discover message. This is actually a broadcast message. So this goes to the broadcast IP address, which is 255.255.255.255, and the broadcast MAC address. So that's where your broadcasts come in. That's when your clients say, "Hey, I need a DHCP, I need a IP address. Who can provide it?" Then your DHCP server, even though everybody receives that discover message, your DHCP server is going to be the only one to respond to that message and say, "Okay, I'm the DHCP server. Here's the IP address you can have." And then your host will actually send the request back and say, "Okay, I'll take it." And then it has it. And that's pretty much all there is to the discover. So, questions on that entire section, actually.
Can you give an example for means where we can use static IP and where we use dynamic IP? A simple example.
Okay. You all pretty much connect to... Well, let me do it this way. When you connect to the internet, you go through your ISP. That's where the DHCP comes in, because your DSL modem will actually act as a DHCP client, get an IP address from your ISP, which they're the ones that actually provide them. They have a certain pool that they give out. So there's your DHCP. Your static IP...
I hate to throw a spanner in the works, but DHCP, DSL does not use DHCP to hand out addresses. I'm really sorry. It uses a different protocol, but we can pretend it does.
Is that what the notebook?
These guys have cable.
Cable does, but DSL...
Cable
we can
will, pretend they have cable.
Okay.
Yeah, let's pretend they've got cable.
Okay.
That works for me. But...
Okay. Well, I wasn't actually necessarily... Yeah.
No, dial-up.
The ISP is what you...
Oh, God. I swear. But I can't say.
What I would have said is, you know how when you connect your computers onto your home router, they get an IP address? Like, when you actually connect them onto your home router, generally, and you turn them all on, and they all just magically come up and are able to talk to each other. That's DHCP. Your home
or
router
when I
just
connect my
them
computer,
out a pool of address.
When I connect my computer to work, which is the you know, until I started doing it, was a computer it didn't know about. It said, "Hey, I'm DHCP server. I'm new here. I need an IP address. Can I have one, please?" And it got one. That's what DHCP does.
Well, that's a better example.
Okay, that was... Okay, that was... I'm really wishing
that's
I hadn't
a better
done that
example.
Now.
Okay,
well, no, that's a... Yeah, Engineer Luke, go ahead.
Yeah, you speak about DSL modems, but my point of view is there are different connections. So... which is made by broadband and dial-up connections. Both connections have modem. Physically, we can touch and feel it. But in case satellite and data card, that doesn't have modem, they have one device. Do we think both are same DSL modems, or do we think they are separate modems, sir?
I don't quite understand the question. Do you, Brian? I understand that you can touch DSL routers.
Yeah.
Figured out.
We have modems. So the physical modems, I'm talking about physical modems. Same modems are data card connection and broadband connection have modems. But that is a wireless modem, and it was the broadband is wide modem. Do we think same modems are come under DSL modems?
Well, what I was actually attempting to do was just use a basic example for DHCP. And I probably could have used a little bit better of one like what Carrie and Sean gave with the actual router. But really, I think what you're asking is your DSL, what they call a DSL modem.
We're taking
modem,
DSL
which,
out of the equation right now.
DSL's coming out of the
DSL
equation.
DSL doesn't do DHCP.
Because it doesn't...
Forget it.
Yeah.
For the minute, we're going to pretend that it's not relevant.
Because right now it isn't.
Yeah. Right now it's not. but that's kind of...
If you study with me in Discovery too, it might be, but not...
What this boils down to, guys, is there's two ways of handing out IP addresses. One is you put it all in from the keyboard. Rattle, rattle, mistake, 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 my internet didn't work. Or via a DHCP server. Rattle, rattle, and then the administrator breaks the entire cluster until the administrator goes and fixes the entire cluster by changing one setting. That's what DHCP boils down to. Do you want 100 computers configured automatically with changes that can be applied in, as soon as you know users reboot the computers, or do you want the work experience kid running around to every computer keying in numbers that they might get wrong into all of those network configuration dialogues?
Any other questions on DHCP or static IP addresses?
DHCP basically means your computer is like basically screaming for attention until it gets an IP address.
No, it doesn't. It actually screams 3 times and then gives up.
Oh. But if it were a person, it would be very irritating, I'm sure.
Okay. Next section is covering address management. So, in here you have section on network boundaries and address space. This is going to be an interesting one to cover, but anyway, this is going back and talking about your routers. Your routers are the boundaries between networks. And they are generally going to be your default gateway. And that's pretty much... that is pretty much the entire network boundary section. Alright. So, then it moves into address assignments. And once again, this is actually going and talking about your routers connecting to the internet. They keep their internal IP addresses. They have one public that goes to the internet. And they have several different ways that they show in here as to how public and private IP addresses are determined. So you can have a direct connection to the internet, which means you go onto the internet with one computer. Easily enough, then that computer has a public IP address. The other two that they actually list are connection through an integrated router, and they have a connection through a gateway device. So in either case, you're going to connect to the internet, you're going to get one public IP address, and then that is going to be given to your router, and then your router then turns around and hands out private IP addresses to your network. And then of course nobody sees private IP addresses. Otherwise, your router's configured wrong. Which then brings us into network address translation. Hint that there is a couple of questions on the test. So, the short end of network translation is that it will take your private IP addresses and translate them out to one public IP address. So your router's... You're behind your network, you send out a request, your router says, okay, I see that you want to send this request out. It translates your private IP address to the IP address that it has, so then your router is the one technically sending the information out to the internet, and then once the information that you want comes back, it goes to your router, gets translated back to your private IP address, and that's kind of the short and easy description of network address translation. And that's the end of that chapter. So, questions? Okay. Let's see here. Is everybody awake? We're going to take a chapter quiz. Okay. Question one says a technician is setting up equipment. Which three devices need IP addresses? So, this is going to be a yes or no for the devices. First one, a printer with an Ethernet card. Would that need an IP address, yes or no? Any other answers? Okay. The correct answer would be yes, that the printer does need an IP address, because it's a printer with an Ethernet card. So that means that you're going to actually plug it into the network and use it as a network printer. So, what about a webcam attached directly to a host? Very good. That would not need one. How about a server with two network interface cards? Very good. What about an IP phone? And yes, the correct answer for that one was yes. But what about an IP telephone? And the correct answer for the IP telephone is yes. And those are the three. But the other two are standalone workstation and a PDA attached to a networked workstation. So, just out of curiosity, who can tell me what that PDA would be considered if it's attached to a networked workstation? Yeah, the question I'm asking is, the PDA that's attached to the workstation, what kind of device would that be considered? This is going back to an earlier chapter.
Is it plug and play?
Close. What would that plug and play device actually, what's the term used for that plug and play device?
So it is the external device.
What's that? I was kind of going. No. That PDA, I was going back to the earlier chapter, that PDA would be considered a peripheral. I was actually going back and testing on previous chapter material.
Back
for
to
part
chapter,
of that.
The trick is,
yes.
Guys, if something's hanging off a computer, it doesn't need an IP address because it's not talking on the network. If it's talking on the network in its own right, it needs an IP address. And the reason they're asking you this is, if your printer is hanging off your computer, it doesn't need an IP address. But if your printer is connected to the network, it needs an IP address.
Well, no, that's not where I was going. I was actually going for the peripheral thing to see if everybody remembered from, like, chapter 2 or 3, whichever one it was. That's where I was going with that one. Enginulu, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Plug and play means I feel before, I know, if you take 95 Windows, like if we connect any device like keyboard and mouse, we need to install particular software about particular device. Later, Windows XP and Windows Vista, not only external device, if we connect any device, you know, like keyboard and mouse also, it will accept without installing any software. That is called a plug and play support, I feel.
Yeah, that's true.
That,
I don't think anybody's arguing
that
there.
That's
what plug and play does.
That's exactly what it does. But, like I said, I was trying to throw in material from a previous chapter, just to keep everybody on their toes. Okay, so, question two. Which three statements are true of binary octets? Choose three. So, first statement. If a bit is zero, its column value is not counted.
Repeat the question once.
The question's asking, it says, choose three, let me see, hang on. Which three statements are true about binary octets? So you're basically choosing yes or no for the statements. And the statement is, if a bit is zero, its column value is not counted. I heard one yes, and the yes, that is true of binary octets, especially if you're converting them to decimal.
Hang on.
If you if,
It says if it's
go
set
ahead.
to zero, it's not counted?
What?
That's exactly what it says. I don't understand why it's coming up with that, but that's exactly what it says in the notes in the quiz.
I think what it's trying to say is that trailing zeros can sometimes not be counted.
No, it says if it's set to zero, it's not counted. It's still
That
counted.
doesn't make any sense. That statement makes absolutely zero sense.
What's the answer key say?
The answer key says that's true of binary octets. But see, the other ones that they're looking for don't have anything to do with that. So I'm thinking that what they're doing is they're actually looking, they're kind of looking at all aspects of binary, including the conversion. I'm thinking
Yeah,
that's
fair.
what they're doing, based on the answer.
I think what they wanted for a binary octet is all trailing zeros don't count. And that is true. Yeah.
Yeah, because zeros in the middle certainly do count. Like, they make a difference, but the trailings. Anyway, let's move on to the next question.
Well, the second statement in this question says the value of each bit in an octet is twice that of the bit to its right.
Yes or no, guys? Is the bit that
Yeah, it's
is
a
to the
yes or no.
left of the previous bit worth double?
If you're going from binary to decimal, that would be yes, it is true. That's kind of why I was thinking, based on those two statements, that first one was, even though the zeros are like kind of placeholders, that you don't actually count those columns where they are. That's kind of what I was thinking. Based on those two, that's what I was thinking. But anyway, next statement. The rightmost bit in an octet has a value of zero when it is turned on. Very good. The answer is no for that one. A host looks at every bit of an IP address as it is received by the NIC.
Yeah, Brian, sorry for the interruption. This is Sridhar speaking. Actually, those first two questions are in contrast to each other, no? I'm not able to understand in the first thing why zero isn't counted.
Okay, if you've got a number that's 0000000001, it's only the one that's important.
But if it is reversed, like 1000, then it should be counted, no?
Yeah, that's what we said. That's why we said leading zeros.
Okay, I'm not looking at chat. Who's got the question?
Angel, there. Yeah, him.
Anjanulu, go ahead.
Yeah. Actually, no, sir. Zero and ones are digits. The computer works binary coded language. From the binary code, means binary digits, we are bit. A bit is made by binary digits. First BI, last TS means bits. So why don't we count zero? Zero also particular bit.
Leading zeros. If you have, if you only need four, excuse me. If you only need four bits for a, for well, let me back this up. Leading zeros aren't counted if you're doing conversions from decimal or from binary to decimal. The spots where the zeros are basically like placeholders for you to be able to see what numbers you need or don't need to add up. So remember last week when I when we were going over the binary, that you only add the ones, the columns with the ones in them. The zeros are significant, but in this case, we're going with the leading zeros that aren't necessary.
Yeah. Thank you, sir.
And if you guys haven't done the Chapter 5 lab, might I recommend you doing it? Because
Absolutely.
It will actually explain a little bit more of this with the leading zeros and the concepts behind that.
Are we done? Because I have something I want to discuss with these people off recording. Oh, okay, cool, sorry.
There's more quiz. You're only up to chapter 2. Question 2.
Yeah, there's more quiz. There's 8 more questions, and
okay.
then I'll stop recording.
You have a partial one from me, because I forgot. Even when I came in, but
I'm recording.
You'll have some.
Brian's recording.
It's fine. It's fine. I've got the whole thing.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at this question 3 to see. Okay. This is going to kind of go back to our discussion of classes. It wants to match the number of the first octet to the address class. And no, not all of these are going to be used. So, if you have the first octet as 0, will there be any class addresses associated with that?
Answer no.
Yeah. Go ahead and answer. Very good. There is no class addresses used, and it's only going to be A, B, or C, class A, B, or C. So, if that helps people out, that's the only 3 classes you need to worry about. It's A, B, and C. So, what if your first octet is 126? What class would that be associated with? A, B, or C?
Does anyone here know
Nobody
how to determine
an
the class of an IP address? Does anybody know how we determine the class? Does anybody remember this?
Is anybody awake?
Yeah.
Okay, do you need the question again, or do you have a question? Okay. The question says, I'm going to give you the first octet, the first number of an IP address, and you have to determine which class it belongs to, A, B, or C. So that's the short end of the question. And the one we're on now is 126. Yes, that would be class A. Alright, so what about 130? And that would be class B. And the last one that is really of any importance is 200. Very good, that is class C. Alright, so that's those 3. Number 4. Which statement is true concerning private network addresses? So this is going to be A, B, C, or D. So A is they're always routed on the internet. B, they can be used by only one company at a time. C, they enable internet web servers to be easily accessed by outside users. Or D, they are more secure because they are visible only to the local network. Choose now. Very good. The answer is D. They are visible. They are more secure because they are visible only to the local network. Okay. How many class number 5? How many class C networks are reserved for private address space? A 1, B, 16, C, 128, or D, 256. Choose now. Very good. The answer is 256. Okay. So what is the destination MAC? What is the destination MAC address of a broadcast Ethernet frame? Is it A, 255.255.255.255? Is it B, 1.1.1.1? Is it C, AA-AA-AA-AA-AA-AA? Or is it D, FF-FF-FF-FF-FF-FF-FF? Choose now. And the correct answer is D. It is the one that is all F's. The answer A, which is 255.255.255.255, does anybody remember what that is? That is a broadcast address, but does somebody remember which broadcast address that is? Nobody remembers, huh? Okay. Let's say we just went over it here a little bit ago, but that is your broadcast IP address. Okay.
Actually, technically, that's called the non-network specific broadcast address, if we really want to be pedantic, because it's broadcast
to all computers
regardless of their network. Because that's different to the network broadcast address. So it's the non-directed network broadcast, I think, is the name for that one.
Fortunately, we're in Discovery One, so we don't care.
Yeah. That's true. Okay, so this is match the statements with categories. So you're either matching statements for... statements are either going to describe static IP addressing or dynamic IP addressing. Alright, so the first statement is useful for printers or servers. Static or dynamic IP addressing. Very good, that is static. What about provides more control over network resources? They have that listed under static. They have that one listed under static. Because you have to assign your IP addresses, so therefore you can assign computers to you can give computers IP addresses and bring them on the network, or you can choose not to, and they won't be able to get on the network, I believe is the short end as to why that one is, why that's that one's for static. Okay, so the next statement, possibility of input errors. And yes, that would be static. So what about useful for mobile users? Yes, that would be dynamic. Addresses provided by a server. the statement's asking static or dynamic. Addresses provided by a server. Which one would that describe, static or dynamic? And yes, that would be dynamic. What about draws addresses automatically from a pool? And yes, that one would be dynamic. Addresses, and what about last one for this question? Addresses are not reassigned to another device. Okay, yes, that would be static. I think I'm I'm thinking I'm gonna like skip let's see. I'm thinking I'm gonna skip question 8 because I'm not sure how to go about doing this one very easily. It's asking place the DHCP messages in the order that they're needed to get a DHCP.
I know how we can do this. What's the first message DHCP sends out, everybody? Anyone remember? First message. Or do we give them the names of the messages and see if anybody can order them? Because we usually do this first, second, third, fourth. That's how I do it.
Okay, alright, let me do... Okay, then let's do it this way. So, what you want... Place DHCP messages in the order that's needed to obtain an IP address from the DHCP server. So, which one comes first? Is it the DHCP request, DHCP discover, DHCP offer, or the DHCP acknowledge? Which one of those comes first?
We have one person saying discover. Anybody else? Yep. Two people saying discover.
All right. That's good. That would be the first one. So, which of the DHCP request, DHCP offer, or DHCP acknowledge? Which one comes next?
No.
Sorry, guys. No. Yep. Nope. The discover comes first, then the... Yes, then it should be the offer. Then which one comes next? Very good. Which leaves the last request is next, which leaves... Yep, the DHCP request is the third one, which leaves... DHCP acknowledgement as the last one. Okay, two more questions. We'll try and get through these quickly. ISR has a public IP address issued by the ISP. What is the purpose of the public IP address? Is it A, allows internal hosts to communicate with each other on the local network? Is it B, allows internal hosts to communicate with other hosts on the internet? Is it C, allows the ISR to communicate with local hosts on the network? Or is it D, allows the ISR to communicate with local servers on the network? Choose now. Very good. The correct answer is B, that it allows internal hosts to communicate with other hosts on the internet. Okay. Question 10. What function does NAT perform in an ISR? NAT takes a source IP address and translates it to a default gateway address is A. B, NAT takes a local IP address and translates it to an internal source IP address. C, NAT takes an internal global IP address and translates it to a local source IP address. Or D, NAT takes an internal source IP address and translates it to a global IP address. Choose now. And the correct answer is that NAT takes an internal source IP address and translates it to a global IP address. And question 11 has a graphic which I do not have the descriptions for, so we'll skip it, I think.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, it's question 11 says refer to the graphic and has a question about the graphic, which I don't have the descriptions for, so that question's out. And
we'll sort that on Wednesday.
And yeah. Okay. That's it, unless anybody has any questions.